Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Music that indicates I'm disturbed about something. Maybe not today, although I tend to be disturbed by the general track of our culture. Good morning to you. October 12th today, Monday, the year of our Lord 2020. The confirmation for Supreme Court nominee Amy Barrett Coney. Amy Coney Barrett gets on today. So that will be its own extravaganza. And so, anyway, if you're outraged by it, read the history. Know that both parties have done this. And to think that one would do otherwise is a bit foolish. And to include, there's even been Supreme Court justices nominated during the lame duck period of our government. How about that? After the election. After the people have spoken. Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, so don't be afraid of history before you get going. So that's going on today. I watched The Graduate last night. Talk about a great movie. And I'll tell you what, I mean, Anne Bancroft's character is awesome. And, I mean, her, you know, as the counterbalance to Dustin Hoffman playing this, like, mildly neurotic college graduate who's, you know, and you see the 60s written all over the movie, right? You know, quintessential to the movie is the phrase plastics, right? The guy taking Dustin Hoffman, newly graduated guy, editor of the school paper, track star, academic guy, all of it. But outside and telling him, I've got one word for you. Hanging on that word, right? And plastics. Right, somebody's going to give you like great life advice. Plastic. It's just, and it's funny. And then you see things in the movie. For instance, Dustin Hoffman floating in the pool at his parents' home, and with a beer that has to be opened by a can opener. There is no like pop off top or whatever you call that thing today. There is none of that. It's like you had to get the can opener and open the can of whatever he's drinking. He's drinking Olympia at one point. He's drinking Coors in another scene. So the stuff is funny. But in my opinion, Anne Bancroft has the best. She has the funniest lines in it. You know, do you know I'm an alcoholic? Why are you afraid to go in the house? I'm neurotic. And so she just, so Colleen and I, when we watch movies, the way we choose the movie is one person gets to nominate three movies. And they have to, they have to be Best Picture winners. Now, oddly enough, The Graduate was not. And so I nominated, well, I had like my bank called and said somebody had my debit card number and was using it to order $10 things from Walgreens. So then they have to stop it and have to go through all that stuff. So that happened. So all of a sudden it dawns on me like, yeah, I can't order a movie because my debit card not going to be here for a couple days. So now we got to watch a free movie. So I was scrolling through movies, right, that have award winners, critically acclaimed movies on Amazon Prime that I could watch for free, which was required last night. So I see The Graduate. So I'd say, tell Colleen, okay, we can watch The Graduate. What was the other one? Or Da Vinci Codes. So she says, The Graduate. I said, okay, let me tell you what this is about. It's set in the 60s. So, you know, life has a pattern. Okay, you come out of college and, you know, you do what your family expects you to do, whether you're a man or a woman. I was just laying there and, I mean, it's so, the movie, I don't think it's supposed to be a comedy. Is it a comedy? It's got to be part comedy. But it's not a comedy per se. But I would tell you, if you haven't seen The Graduate in a while, don't be afraid to bust it out. And it's a great movie. Dustin Hoffman's great in it. I think Anne Bancroft she's fantastic in it. As she plays her part incredibly well. And then, God, who's the female lead? She's in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, too. I forgot her name. And I knew her name last night. Catherine. Is it Catherine? Anyway. Yeah. So it's a great movie. Now I'm going to give everybody a reading assignment. One of the things that I have on my website that I hadn't read in a while is if you go to the website, you go to post-traumatic winning tab, you'll see right now there's one. A second one's going to get added today. There's something that Admiral Stockdale wrote, which is Master of My Fate, Stockdale on Stoicism. So, in that thing, yesterday, I tried to now, because one of the problems of working from home is that you can work all the time. And I've always said when your work is your passion, is what you're passionate about, it fundamentally imbalances your life, which tends not to be a good thing. Okay. And so now I have two studios in my home, which further skews your life towards work, which again, I'm not sure is a good thing. And so when you have stuff that you feel like you have to get done and all of that, then, you work probably too much. Right. So I've taken to setting aside Sunday and not doing too much work. Right. Or if I have to do anything, get it done early and then spend the day doing something that if you listen to on Thursday, I tend not to have anything to say when it comes to what are you reading, because most of my reading involves current events, and most of my time taken up by producing and this job right here, and I don't tend to have a lot of free time to read, which I want to tell you, which bothers me. So yesterday is a beautiful day here in Southern California. I'm outside, and I had printed out earlier in the week this paper, Stockdale on Stoicism, Master of My Faith. Now, mind you, it's the second part. I read the second part first, and I thought, well, where the hell's the first part? So I won't. This is going to be the subject of our discussion on Thursday. All things relative to Stoicism, right? And stock. And I even had to learn how to pronounce, right? I had to learn how to pronounce the great Stoic philosopher's name. And it's spelled E-P-I-C-T-E-T-U-S. And you hear it pronounced a lot of different ways, right? So it's Epictetus. You hear it pronounced Epictetus. Or more emphasis on the E. So anyway, so I looked it up. So just so you know, right? So you can have an audio lesson. I'll give you how to pronounce Epictetus. Here you go.
Already know, right? And I can.
You can only control yourself internally. And in fact, Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher,
Epictetus,
the most profound teachers,
will be reading Plato, Aristotle, and Epictetus, the two contemporary works that we're looking at.
Epictetus,
person on earth. And then you have Epictetus. He's this other famous
Epictetus
philosopher.
I'm trying to teach myself again.
So he was a
Epictetus. Okay. So there you go. How to pronounce. It's a whole series on the it's just a whole series on the internet. I'm trying to look at other segments you can watch on other words that are evidently difficult for people to pronounce. Epictetus. I'll forget it. E-dog. I shouldn't say that, but anyway. It's what I tend to do. E-man. So E-man writes, so I'm reading, and I come across these sections. The Stoic. See, now I always assumed a Stoic, right? What is the definition of the word Stoic? Well, I'll read that to you right here. Yeah, today's actually going to be, you know, moderately educational. A person who can endure pain or hardship without showing their feelings or complaining. So I believe, you know, so what are the Stoics? That's what the Stoics are? And the second definition is a member of the ancient philosophical school of Stoicism. So anyway. And this is Stockdale writing, right? Now, if I call Zinni the burning bush, I would call Stockdale -1 or -2. He might be -1, burning bush -1, and Zinni burning bush -2. Stockdale pretty, like, he doesn't say too many things that you could push back on. The Stoic demand for disciplined thought naturally won only a small minority to its standard, because who wants to be disciplined, that emphasis with mine. But those few were the strongest characters of their time. In theory, a doctrine of pitiless perfectionism, Stoicism actually created men of courage, saintliness, and goodwill. Rhinelander, who was Stockdale's mentor when Stockdale went to study at Stanford, and Stockdale was supposed to study international relations, but when he got there, he found that he wasn't interested. He was more interested in philosophy, and in particular, the Stoic philosophers. So he meets this guy, I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Rhinelander. And Rhinelander allows Stockdale to join the master's program midway through, or maybe a third of the way through. And to supplement that, Rhinelander says, you're going to come to my house once a week for 3 hours a session, and we're going to go through this, and I'll catch you up. Stockdale immediately agrees. So he gets his at his version of postgraduate school, right? At Stanford University. What a great program, huh? For the Navy at the time. Stockdale gets enlightened to a philosophy that will become the basis of his leadership in captivity. So Stockdale goes on in his paper. In theory, a doctrine of pitiless perfectionism, Stoicism actually created men of courage, saintliness, and goodwill. Rhinelander singled out three examples: Cato the Younger, Emperor Marcus Aurelius, and Epictetus. Cato was a great Roman Republican who pitted himself against Julius Caesar. He was the unthinkable hero of our own George Washington. Scholars find quotations of Cato in Washington's farewell address without quotation marks. Washington, that plagiarist. Emperor Marcus Aurelius took the Roman Empire to the pinnacle of its power and influence. And Epictetus, the great teacher, played his part in changing the leadership of Rome from the swill that he had known under Nero to the power and decency it knew under Marcus Aurelius. Epictetus drew the same sort of audience Socrates, or Socrates to some of you, had drawn 500 years earlier. Young aristocrats destined for careers in finance, the arts, public service. The best families sent him their sons in their middle 20s to be told what the good life consisted of, to be disabused of the idea that they deserved to become playboys, and to be taught that their job was to serve their fellow men. Whoa. Epictetus. Yeah. Now, Epictetus, interesting guy, he begins his life as a slave and ultimately wins his own freedom by becoming a philosopher. Epictetus explained that his curriculum, now imagine me sitting reading this yesterday, out in my backyard, that his curriculum was not about, quote, revenues or income or peace or war, but about happiness and unhappiness, success and failure, slavery and freedom. His model graduate was not a person, quote, able to speak fluently about philosophic principles as an ideal babbler, but about things that will do you good. Will do you good if your child dies, if your brother dies, or if you must die or be tortured. Let others practice lawsuits, others study problems, others syllogisms. Here you practice how to die, how to be enchained, how to be racked, how to be exiled. A man is responsible for his own judgments, even in dreams, in drunkenness, and in melancholy madness. Each individual brings about his own good or his own evil, his own fortune, his ill fortune, his happiness, or his wretchedness. It is unthinkable that one man's error could cause another man's suffering. Suffering, like everything else in Stoicism, was all internal. Remorse at destroying yourself. Epictetus was telling his students that there can be no such thing as being the victim of another. You can only be a victim of yourself. It's all in how you discipline your mind. Who is your master? Quote, "He who has authority over any of the things on which you have your heart set, what is the result at which all virtue aims? Serenity. Show me a man who though sick is happy, who though in danger is happy, who though in prison is happy, and I'll show you a Stoic." So I'm reading this, and then he goes on to talk about his time as squadron commander. Then he talks about, you know, his time. So what Stockdale knows is what Epictetus says, is that this is where he's at, right? And he will make his own fortune wherever he's at. So anyway, so we will, that will be the subject of the Mensa brothers this Thursday. So it should be interesting because they're smart guys, and I'd be curious to hear what they say about Stoicism. But Stoicism has much in common with post-traumatic winning. And that is, you know, the premise of post-traumatic winning is you decide how you respond to the things that happen in your life, most of which you will not, you know, you will not create. And so I'm reading that yesterday, and I'm thinking, wow, you can see the parallel tracks. And so now I'm more curious about Stoicism and whatnot. And so I will be reading that. So there's a few. I looked for an audiobook that I could listen to while I work. But philosophy tends to be something that you have to read quietly, right? You can't read it with a ball game on or anything like that. So I will be embarking on a study of Epictetus. So, and actually, I'm excited to do it. One other thing, you know, one of the coolest parts about doing this is, wow, Joe Morgan, the second baseman for the Big Red Machine and broadcaster on ESPN for years, has died at the age of 77. Huh. Baseball is losing some of the biggest names and personalities it's ever had this year. So thoughts and prayers go out to his family. He was in his prime. He was one of the most dominant players in the big leagues. I mean, he was awesome, especially for the, he played for the Houston Astros for most of his career, but towards the end of it, when he had his best years, he was playing for the Cincinnati Reds. But obviously, thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Joe Morgan. One of the best things about post-traumatic winning is watching people change other people's lives and the impact that has on them. So I want to give a special shout out to Bev. Most of you know her from her weather updates from South Central Saskatchewan. And but Bev has kind of gone from consumer to exporter relative to post-traumatic winning. And you can hear it in her emails. And so Bev has now begun impacting a lot of different lives where she lives. And it is the most wonderful feeling as you get emails from, and again, my life, how crazy my life is. This happens to me so often. Is that you get an email just pops up in the middle of the day. And in this case, we were actually working on my website, and so I was making sure that the links that are on the resource page, and Bev had told me in a couple weeks earlier that they. that there was problems with a few of them. And so I was attempting to go ahead and remedy that. So so she sent me an email, I don't know, Saturday or Sunday, telling me stories of, you know, the different people that have been impacted by post-traumatic wedding. And it's one of the most wonderful parts of what I do is hearing the stories of other people as they touch the life of somebody else, as they live that my admonishment at the end of the program. Don't be afraid to change somebody's life. All you got to do is listen. And you know what? That straight up is the truth. And all you do, when you listen and reach out to somebody is you're going to turn on a light to a path that most people don't know exists, because, the problem in our culture today, and I believe the problem with mental health, most of us don't need therapists. Okay. Most of us need somebody to talk to. Most of us need a mentor. Most of us need a coach. We don't need to go in and sit on somebody's couch and being asked, how does that make you feel? And being told that the reason for all of our problems is because you hate your mother, or you hate your father because you really want to marry your mother, and all this other crazy shit, right? Now, I know that's unfair, okay, but that's not what most of us need. Most of us need somebody who we respect to look at us and say, hey, what you're going through is normal. We all go through it. And let me show you a path, and let me give you the rules of this path. And if you'll obey the rules, you can go down this path and you can live not only a good life, but a great life. I tell you. And I saw a video that the former Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Carlton Kent, put out, and I take issue with it. And what he's telling people is don't be afraid to go to mental health. Well, Sergeant Major, they do go to mental health. They do go to mental health. I know, because I talk to them all the time. And guess what they find? Nothing. And that tends to be the problem. It's rare that you encounter people who are going through these mighty struggles and have never been to mental health. It's exceptional. It's exceptional. So the bigger problem is the rest of us need to know how to help people, just like we would know CPR, just like we would know how to do first aid. And I would tell you that that's the bigger problem. The rest of us don't know because we've outsourced it, because that's the way the DOD sets it up. Oh, mental health, you go over there. So when I see people say, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help, well, the majority of people do. And guess what they find? I mean, you're littered on the trail of suicide is, yeah, he went to the VA. And they gave him his medications, and he was going to group, and then he just stopped going. Literally, that litters the trail that you follow to most suicide. What happened? Well, they did. They did exactly what we told them to do. Go to mental health. And they did. And they came up empty. And that's what's got to be fixed. That's what's got to be fixed. I think most people are smart enough to know that when they're really struggling, they need to reach out for help. But when you reach out, if what you get is doesn't resonate with you, then you're going to find your own way. And that's the problem right there. So anyway, some thoughts from my weekend. Napman says that Joe Morgan spoke at one of his Little League opening days. Sorry to hear he's passed away. Yeah, I mean, and he's a, you know, relatively young guy, right? Relatively young guy. At the age of 77, I say that as a 62-year-old guy, but here's another one from Ohio, man. Joe Morgan was a big-time Honda dealer in the Cincinnati area. Yeah. Ohio Man's a Honda guy, just so you know. I just bought McMaster's new book on audio. Looks very interesting. And I dig that guy. That's a 60s term, since we're talking about The Graduate. Would love to know more about the rumors about him and General Mattis throwing down. McMaster's a big dude, man. I mean, he looks like a big dude. He looks like a robust dude. Be careful when you read McMaster's. His shit is pretty depressing. A note about the website. I think you're going to... If you're looking for the podcast page, it's retabbed. Yeah, somehow or other, the podcast page got corrupted. So I think if you use your old link, it's going to take you no place, okay? So what you need to do is you need to delete your old link, right? You need to go to the website, and then you need to click on the podcast page. And once you click on the podcast page, you'll see the new page come up. Now, I may be able to fix that. So if you don't see it, it's there. But it says when you click on podcast, right, the page, I won't go into it. Never mind. It's website shit. Yeah, you know, one of the things about becoming a small business owner, I always say this, right? Somebody says, oh, you should have a website. You really shouldn't. Resist that at all costs. Do not have a website, right? Have a Facebook page. Don't have a website. Websites, I'm telling you. This past week, you know, I spent most of Saturday working on my website. Yeah. I had to redo the podcast page, and then I had to make sure the there's a sister site, Post-Traumatic Winning. Yeah, it doesn't have everything because I try to make it not as marine-like. So anybody who would be interested, I tell them go to Post-Traumatic Winning. So, and I'm going to make it more civilian-friendly, and it will. That's where the Trauma to Joy, and maybe I should rename that webpage traumatojoy.com. So I had to tweak that one too. So I tweaked both my webpages. And then I have to, and then somebody, NROTC, University of Arizona, said, hey, is your podcast on Pandora? And I said, I don't know. Let me check. So I go to Pandora. I do a search because sometimes they'll like source feeds. And it was not. And so I went. And I'm applying to, you know, you got to do this stuff to have your podcast picked up by Pandora. You got to give them your RSS feed. I'm not even going to talk about that, but those of you who know what an RSS feed is. So that way your stuff's automatically inducted into Pandora, into iTunes, into whatever, Google Podcast, all these different platforms. So in doing so, they asked me for statistics. How many downloads did you do last year? And it was like millions, right? And then it's like, so what is that average per episode per day? Okay, so two episodes a day times 50 weeks, that's 100, right? So anyway, you do the math. So I had to go do that again. So I got to go dredge out, and I couldn't remember how to do it. Like, where are these data files that are on your server that tell you everything? Oh, my God. So anyway, I did that. And this time I even created instructions, so the next time I have to do it. Yeah, so this whole website thing. And the issue with the podcast page is this. Is that as you create a second page, you can't have the same name as the first, right? So the software default names it different. So this is podcast 2. So then you have to delete podcast 1, right, and then rename podcast 2. So I'm not that far yet. So anyway, it's there. If you source the podcast page through the homepage, you'll find it. That link works. the link that you have saved in your browser may not. But it might in the future, because I have to rename this to avoid all confusion, podcast. So the web page has to have the same name as, right, the language on the website. That helps everybody. That helps the computers. All right. So now you know. I wanted to talk about, and maybe I will during the news segment here, but I have a series of news stories. I'm going to sneeze. Hold on. Excuse me. I have a series of news articles that caught my eye over the weekend. First one is why Johnny still can't read. And it's an amazing article. Written by a guy named Baker Mitchell. I'm always leery of people who have two last names. Yeah. It's like Thurston Howell III, right? Like, it's not like Larry Smedfield. Like, he's got a first name and a last name. Baker Mitchell, founder of the Roger Bacon Academy in Leland, North Carolina, is a former member of the North Carolina Public Charter School Advisory Council, the State Charter School Advisory Board, and the North Carolina Alliance for Public Charter Schools. So I'll read you the first part of it, and then we'll go ahead and it appeared in National Review. And then we'll go ahead and start the show. But here's the first part of it that caught my eye. Public schools from coast to coast are failing to teach young students the most basic skill they need to succeed in school and in life, reading. The failure is widespread, tragic, and mostly unnecessary. We know how to teach reading, but many school administrators refuse to use the proven method. The extent of this self-inflicted catastrophe, which has ruined countless lives, was driven home to me again when the new school year began several weeks ago. Some 20 years ago, I founded the Roger Bacon Academy, which manages a family of four charter schools in southeastern North Carolina. This year, for the first time in Roger Bacon Academy history, the schools enrolled large numbers of students who transferred from traditional county public schools. Of the 168 first and second graders who transferred, 75 students, approximately 45% of the total, could not pass the most basic readiness assessment to begin kindergarten level reading instruction. Think about that. Now, I know you're saying, well, that's North Carolina. He's going to dissuade you of that here shortly. But I'll read it again. Of the 168 first and second grade transfer students, approximately 45% or 75 students could not pass the basic readiness assessment to begin kindergarten level reading instruction. So these are first and second graders who can't pass the basic assessment to begin kindergarten. So anyway, I want to talk about that. There's a couple other stories that caught my eye. I wasn't really in the mood to talk about China, but I saw some interesting headlines from some interesting places. Bloomberg: China's insistence that Taiwan isn't a country starts backfiring on them. Next headline from Reuters: Breaking views. China tensions reach skyscraper heights in Sydney. Now, we've all kind of followed, you know, China attempting to overwhelm Australia with students in their universities, with programs and whatnot, Australia pushing back. So that's kind of interesting. Another story is from Reuters. Worsening Chinese-U.S. ties pose a huge risk to China's financial network. That in the news today. And then one more from the Wall Street Journal. U.S.-China trade war gets wrapped up in twist ties. So I saw just a whole slew of stories about China. So I thought I would do a little segment on China. So on a Monday morning, hope everybody's doing well out there. Our descent into hysteria continues today with the commencement of the confirmation trials of Amy something something. She got a hyphenated name. I know that. Barrett Comey, something like that. Amy Comey Barrett, something like that. Anyway, of her. You know who I'm talking about. That's going on. The shit show that is our election continues. And not looking too good for D. Trump, man. The COVID thing, canceling the debates. That means Joe Biden's not going to have to stand in front of the American people again on the hot spot. So he'll just hide in the basement all the way to possibly being elected as the president of the United States. I don't think Joe Biden would have survived, in spite of how screwed up Donald Trump is, if he'd been out there on a regular basis. Do you remember when his campaign as a Democrat in the primary died? Remember that? Remember that he was out among people and he was in, I want to say, Pittsburgh, and he got into it with steelworkers or something like that? And I mean, and then like a week later, it happened again. If Joe Biden, if the world is normal, dare I say, and he's out and about, then how is Joe Biden any different than the Joe Biden that nobody supported in any of his other presidential candidates, any other of his presidential runs? He's not. And it's going to be almost, you know, F-18 man talks about aviation mishaps, and I apply it to mishaps in general. But what happens is this kind of Swiss cheese thing, and it's slices of Swiss cheese from different blocks of Swiss cheese. Okay, now Swiss cheese has holes in it. I don't know why, but it does. Due to the way it cures, I guess. But anyway, so you take different slices from different blocks and you put them together, and lo and behold, there's a hole by virtue of the way they line up. And all these different blocks of cheese, somehow or other, there's a small opening that they have in common. And that's how this event proceeds, through all those little holes. And so F-18 man calls it the Swiss cheese model, right? All these, you know, all these factors that are very separate converge at a spot in time. And it's a great way of articulating it, because, you know, you see it. And so that's what's going to happen if Joe Biden becomes president of the United States. I mean, all you have to do, I said this last week, but I'll say it again. I think Ben Shapiro said, in order to beat Joe Biden, all you got to do is let him get out and be himself. But if you watch what he does, right, very controlled, very scripted, certainly not allowed to be Joe Biden. Certainly not allowed to be Joe Biden. So maybe that gets him elected president of the United States. Holy shit, right? And then Peggy Noonan wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend saying, you know, one of the things that would explain conservatives voting for Biden is just tired of the craziness. Crazy fatigue. So I know a lot of conservatives would go like, "Ah, what do you mean?" Right. And so I think most people that would consider themselves in the center. In fact, I was even thinking about, is it time for a third party in this country? Because what happens when Democrats and Republicans can't do business is you say, okay, well, nobody can cross over. All right. No compromise. Nobody can cross over. If you cross over, as Senator Byron Dorgan once told me, the only thing you ensure is that you're going to have a challenger in your next primary as you get called to sell out, which is true. So no compromise. Well, all you do now is you empower the extremists in your party to hold you hostage for their vote. So what happens if you took, right, conservative Democrats and liberal Republicans, right, or moderate Republicans form the majority of Congress, but they're held hostage by the AOCs and, you know, the most conservative elements of the Republican Party. So what happens if you had a third party? I was thinking of a name. What would you call them? I don't even know what you call them. And you disenfranchise the radicals. And you say, okay, by and large, here's what we do. We believe that the government should limit its taxing to the things that the nation needs, not the things the nation wants. We believe in lending a hand to everybody. Okay? And you go down the list on the things that most Americans agree on. And maybe there's some positions that you say, we don't have a position on this, too polarizing in this country. So we're not going to take a position on it. Maybe abortion's one of those. Okay? If you're looking for an abortion party, then we're not for you. If you're looking, we'll leave abortion to you. You have your own personal beliefs, but this is our platform. And you have the centrist party, and you disenfranchise the crazy. I don't know, but it's so painful to watch this on a regular basis. And again, as I say often, the worst part is there's no end in sight. There's no end in sight. How does it get better? Write me a script that this system that gives us Donald Trump, Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton, right? That system somehow or other gives us better leaders. I don't think that happens. So the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same things and hoping for a different outcome. So this is the system that we have. So good luck to us. Anyway, all right. So good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Should try to change the name, but I'm afraid to, because all the work I put in to do that, yeah, I'll lose it. So I've got to figure out. No, I'll save the page. I'll save the format for the page. I know I can do that, and then I will go ahead and see if I can cure that link. So anyway, The wheels are spinning in my head. How to fix that? This is dedicated to Bev up in Saskatchewan. Congratulations on beginning to change so many lives up there. And to me, it's the most wonderful experience. It's the most wonderful experience, touching the lives of other people. I talked to a good friend of mine, somebody I met as an instructor at a basic school, and we've been friends since then. His name's Dave High. Dave's been through his own trials and tribulations. I did not know this till recently, although I kind of knew generally something happened, but I didn't know the details of the story. And Dave's mother committed suicide when he was a teenager. And I didn't know that. And the stories, the circumstances surrounding it, I won't go into because they're private, but were even made the incident even more devastating. And yesterday he and I had a conversation. And he's now, he's working at one of the missions in, I believe it's Nashville in Tennessee. And he's now got involved with different VA programs to find veterans home. And he's kind of working his way through that. There is a life in his voice that I haven't heard, my God, in a couple decades. And it was amazing to listen to. And the fuel of that life is him getting himself in a position where he can impact the lives of others. So I don't think there's a more profound experience that we have on the planet. And that's why I'm such an advocate for post-traumatic winning and the things that it does and whatnot. So so this today, this dedicated Bev, nice going. Don't screw it up. Keep keep going.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
Junior Walker and the All-Stars. Currently, in Quantico, foggy in 63. Camp Lejeune, partly sunny, 79. Twenty-nine Palms, sunny in 76. Going to get warm out here on the west coast again. Going to be 85 near the coast. So it means 90-something inland. And so the desert will get up there today. At Camp Pendleton, it is sunny in 66 already. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 73. Okinawa, clear, dark, and 73. Down under, somebody said, hey, Mac, you need to start doing the weather in Guam, too, as you make your way across the Pacific. Now, here's my problem. I try to, like, be a little bit diverse in the weather. So geographically, is Guam diverse enough relative to its position on the planet? That's the question. Yeah. So if you bust out your Google Earth, all right, and you go looking for Guam, right? The globe rotates to the Pacific. Okay? So where in fact is Guam? Well, good question. So Guam is on a line that runs from like the middle of Japan down to Australia. Guam is like smack dab in the middle of that. Now, Hawaii, much further to the west. Okay? So, Hawaii, when I deal with Pacific Air Force, the woman who I deal with, she was born on Okinawa. Yeah, born on Okinawa. She's Ryukin. And she says that, well, Mac, we want you to come to here to Hawaii. I'm like, ooh, really? I've never been to Hawaii. Anyway, so, but it sounds cool the way she says it. So we go Hawaii, we go Okinawa, we go Guam, and we go Darwin. I think that's overkill on that one latitude. Yeah, I just went nautical on everybody's ass. So I'm thinking Guam probably, unless it becomes something significant. Darwin, it's at least down under, man. Like, it's way down under. Like, it's like headed towards the South Pole under. So I see some diversity in that. And then we hop all the way over the shitholes that have played so much a part of our lives, and we're actually up in Norway, don't you know? Oh, yeah. So, do you know where Norway is? If I showed you a map, could you tell me the difference between Norway, Sweden, and Finland? Could you? I bet most could not. Yeah. Anyway. So, Tumef is a Norway group. Yep. Yeah. No temperature coming out of the med. So, that's pretty neglected. So, we hop across the country, heavy into the pivot to the Pacific, and but that's where those are marine bases, where Marines are, and so that's why they exist. Currently in Darwin, it is dark cloudy in 81, so a little bit warmer down under, and then in Oslo, it is sunny and 50. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, it is, what did it say, 73, right? What? That's in Okinawa. That's not here. So let me find Costa Mesa, sunny in 66. Today, looking for a high of 85, 86 tomorrow, 84 on Wednesday, 88 on Thursday, 89 on Friday. I was hoping for like 2 or 3 days and then back in the 70s. Shit, man. We're going to go into November like 90 degrees. What the hell is that? All right, let me finish. I just got admonished. Mac, finish the story about reading, please. All right. I'll finish the story about reading, and then we'll get Alex Hollings on. All right. Unfortunately, the prevalence of non-readers moving through our public school system is widespread. Here in North Carolina, in a typical year such as 2017-18, 55.7% of public school students read in grades 3 through 8 fail North Carolina's end-of-the-year reading test. Okay, I'll say that again. 56% of public school students in grades 3 through 8 fail North Carolina's end-of-the-year reading test. On the most recent reading test administered by the National Assessment of Education Progress, NEAP, our so-called Nation's Report Card, just 36% of North Carolina fourth graders perform at or above the NAEP proficient level. 67% performed at the basic level, meaning that a third of all students did not. Lest you think this is a North Carolina problem alone, both measures were on a par with, and in fact, a little above the national average. That ought to scare the shit out of you. Right? So, the way this breaks down is 36% perform at or above the proficient level. 67% performed at the basic level or above. Okay? Which means a third of the students don't come close. The significance of this can't be overstated. If students haven't learned how to read proficiently, or in some cases at all, by the time they enter the fourth grade, it may be all over for them. As the National Conference of State Legislatures pointed out in a report at the end of last year, citing research, my screen froze here, by the Annie Casey Foundation, quote, third grade has been identified as important to reading literacy because it is the final year children are learning to read, after which students are reading to learn. Make sense? North Carolina Superior Court Judge Howard Manning, in the course of his oversight of a 20-year education lawsuit, Leandro versus the state of North Carolina, made a determination that such failures amount to committing academic genocide. Quote, everybody seems to agree that if you are not reading by third grade, you're screwed, Judge Manning told TV news anchor David Crabtree. Quote, from the evidence, there is no reason in the world, if teachers and principals follow the assessments they are supposed to, that a child should not be reading by third grade. I get mad about this. He goes on about teaching to read. It is not as if teaching reading has been ignored by the United States. Teaching reading successfully is a straightforward, well-documented process, and most children, given proper instruction, should be successful readers by the end of kindergarten. The federal government began a 10-year billion-dollar effort called Project Follow-Through in 1968 that tested various methods of teaching reading to at-risk kids in K through 3. It compared 22 curriculum models in 178 communities with 200,000 children. Pretty decent-sized population, right? The direct instruction model, the study found, produced the best results in all areas: basic skills, problem solving, and self-esteem. In 1997, after 20 years of ignoring Project Follow-Through, Congress asked the director of the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, in consultation with the Secretary of Education, to convene a panel to evaluate existing research and evidence to find the best ways to teach children to read. The panel was chaired by the late Dr. Donald Langenberg, then Chancellor of the University of Maryland. The resulting National Reading Panel report of 2000 identified 5 key skills that must be taught for reading, all of which are integral to reading mastery, which, it should be noted, has been widely available since the 1970s. This is depressing, man. Instead of embracing these methods, most of the education establishment, superintendents, principals, schools of education, as they are taught, the teachers snub them. The result, year after year, a significant number of non-readers advancing through the public schools. I'm not talking about students who aren't reading at grade level. I'm talking about students who can't read at any level. Reading mastery. Okay, let me skip to the end of this. The The establishment ignores language for learning, reading mastery, and other proven reading curricula because to do otherwise would shift blame for non-readers to teachers, administrators, the School of Education, and lawmakers who ignore or make excuses for public schools failing. To understand the depth of the problem, look no further than the fate of a law passed here in North Carolina in 1996. General Statute, and he gives a number, Comprehensive Plan for Reading Achievement. The law states, the plan shall be based on reading instructional practices for which there is strong evidence of effectiveness in existing imperial scientific research studies on reading development. And then it states further, blah, blah, blah. The law directed the State Board of Education to modify the standard course of study and to emphasize balanced, integrative, and effective programs of reading instruction that include early and systemic phonics instruction and to, quote, review and evaluate and revise current teacher certification standards and teacher education programs within the institutions for higher education that provide coursework in reading instruction. The law contained no penalties. Or sanctions for non-compliance, and after being ignored by the State Board of Education for 10 years, was repealed in 2017. It's amazing. Reading. So why can't Johnny still read? It's amazing. All right. I don't have time for anything else. Alex Holling's going to join us. So don't touch that dial. More Ballmarine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.